Welcome into another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. It's football and random things on a Labor Day Monday. Iowa State with a 16-10 win over Northern Iowa on Saturday. We are going to recap all of that and, of course, preview Saturday's game against the Iowa Hawkeyes. Jeff Woody, there was nothing pretty about anything that we saw at Jack Trice Stadium on Saturday, except for the crowd and seeing everybody in the tailgate lots and everything. That was beautiful. Everything that happened on the football field was ugly.
I think it was ugly.
I would swipe left on Tinder. That's what I'd do. It's swipe left on that game.
Well, two things. One, it's Victory Monday, so who cares?
Yeah.
And two is, I think Iowa State's defense actually played really solid. I think there was a lot to be excited for defensively. And the old adage, nothing's ever as good as it seems and nothing's ever as bad as it seems, I think applies to this game, and it applies to the upcoming game, because we both watched Iowa. I mean, you have to be at least relatively informed going into this. And I think offensively, they didn't have a ton of output, like Iowa didn't. Just to jump ahead a little bit, like Iowa didn't have a ton of offensive output. They had one big run, which was, I think, on a busted play by Indiana. And then the rest of it was pretty pedestrian, but they also, like, I think Spencer Petras, it was like 13 for 28 or something like that, but like five were drops and four were thrown away passes. So other than good decision plays or just drops, he was like 13 for 17. So like offensively, his passing statistics look bad, but he actually played better than what that looked like. And then defensively, nothing's ever as good as it seems, is their defensive output is absolutely astronomical. And like Riley Moss, shout out to Ankeny Kidd, shout out to Ankeny Sports Performance, Acceleration Iowa. Good job. But shout out, or like, other than that, you know, they had this huge output, but Indiana also like just gave them a lot of those opportunities. So it's not like you can translate a lot of those. Like the first pick six, it was the route run fine by a wide receiver, ball thrown well by a quarterback, just bounced off his chest, it's right place, right time. You get lucky. Like, so nothing's ever as good as it seems. Nothing's ever as bad as it seems. Take that back to Iowa State. Nothing's ever as bad as it seems. You watch that game back, and there is usually like one kind of big, easy mental mistake that shot the play right away that are super easy to correct. And then they're also really bad on third downs. And then again, it's not like anybody made a mistake, but there is kind of what the Charlie Kohler factor on third downs to understand. Like the one specifically talking about is in the 2-minute drive, the one where Brock took the sack. It was like a 3rd and 3. They drop back. Chase Allen is on the right side. He didn't look like he didn't turn around and look for the ball. Despite the fact that there was a pressure look by you and I, he didn't turn and look for the ball to his 4 yards past the first down line. Well, Charlie understands, and that's one of the reasons why Charlie and Brock work well together. Charlie understands there's a pressure look. It's 3rd and 3. I need 4 yards. Bury it on the, you know, box out at linebacker. Brock's going to put on his outside shoulder. End of conversation. There's no sack. It's a first down. They potentially score a touchdown there. And Iowa State goes into half instead of 13-10 or whatever it was. They go into 17-10 and have two consecutive touchdown drives. The complexion of the game is totally different. Like, nothing's ever as good as it seems. Nothing's ever as bad as it seems. But a win is a win is a win is a win. Victory Monday. Move on to Iowa.
For sure. And I think, you know, I was looking at their like success on first down, and it is not corollary of where they were at on third down, like how they actually played on third downs. I mean, they averaged almost 6.2 yards per play on first down, but then still their average third down distance to go is almost 6 yards.
And a lot of that was penalties.
Yeah. They had 3 first down penalties. Mm-hmm. So they did things that, and none of those penalties were like egregious or anything like that. It was just stupid little things, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you clean some of those things up, then all of a sudden, you know, the game probably looks completely different and everybody feels a lot better because it's 28-10 instead of, or, you know, 27-10 instead of 16. It's just 6 points, but like, there's nothing about that with the offense that I walk away from. And I'm like, man, that offense is, you know, they had a tough day. It's like, well, they made some dumb mistakes that shot themselves in the foot. And at the end of the day, like, they can fix them and move on.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I really like, and so this is my correlation to, like, a lot of people are like, well, yeah, it was still only 16-10. You know, again, I don't want to pat ourselves on the back because we also did a little bit of it, of like, I think we both saw, and I think a lot of responsible football fans, you know, see Northern Iowa and go, shoot, man, like they don't get beat often. And I think we talked about it on the podcast that it was going to be closer ish, but eventually we thought Iowa State would run away. So the first half wasn't surprising. The second half, the fact that Iowa State didn't pull away was a little surprising. But also at the same time, you can kind of see where that came from. So we probably fell into the trap ourselves a little bit of kind of the hype train, even though we tried to slow the hype train down. Cause our picks column, I think everybody picked Iowa State to like win by 25 points. So ultimately we all were victim to it, but I think we were both, and everybody who knows Northern Iowa was expecting that to be minimally a close first half, and they hung around more than you were expecting. But what I really like about Saturday, is to use a golf metaphor. When you're trying to improve on golf, and like Patrick Cantlay won the, you know, the PGA FedEx Cup and won like $15 million. And not every shot that he hit was perfect, but his misses were recoverable misses. They weren't like wildly completely off the radar. And so like for me, I'm not near that good. I'm like a, you know, if I shoot an 86, I'm happy. But the thing that improves a golfer is that your bad shots are 10 yards off the fairway, or it's a straight down the line. It's just kind of topped versus being six fairways over. And so the reason why I'm bringing this metaphor up is Iowa State did not play their best game on offense, but their mistakes were very small. They were correctable mistakes. It wasn't a pick six. It wasn't special teams giving up two touchdowns. It wasn't fumbling inside the 10 yard line that Brock Purdy has to recover in triple overtime, whatever. It's not those mistakes weren't the mistakes generally that were made. It was mistakes like Brock overthrowing, like the very first drive. The three plays in the first drive, if I remember correctly, are first play, Breece Hall stretch play to the left side. Breece missed a cut, like a very easy read. Jared Russ kicks his guy out. Breece should have cut underneath where Russ kicked the guy out. Didn't miss the cut. Okay. Too excited. Scratch that one to a misplay. The second one, I think, was the catch fumble by Skates, which really wasn't a catch fumble, should have been an incompletion, but doesn't really matter. Russ got on top of it. And then the third play, Brock had an open Xavier Hutchinson, but overthrew him. That's an overexcitement mistake, an overexcitement mistake, an overexcitement mistake. But it's also more or less, assuming that wouldn't have been a fumble had it, you know, gone the other way, would have gotten challenged and overturned, then it's basically missed cut, incompletion, incompletion. That's fine. Punt the ball away and live to play another down. So like the mistakes that they made this year in relation to years past were a chunk shot that's still in the middle of the fairway. It was not your best, and it's obviously not what you want, but it's a recoverable mistake that you can still get on there in two and one putt, and all of a sudden you still have a par. It's fine. So like, was it perfect? Absolutely not. Was it a drastically horrible game? Absolutely not. Is there a lot to learn from? Yes. So I think the happiness that kind of the, where it comes from is there are mistakes that they made that they can recover from and learn from. And again, move on to Iowa, cause you got a W.
And I think too, a lot of those things you just expect to happen in a first game, mm-hmm. you know, and it's
across the country too.
Oh like yeah.
Across
it's the country. Everywhere. And I want to say too, I think that maybe we had the wrong read on what was going to happen from playing in the spring, or I was wrong. I'll admit I was wrong about how big of an impact playing in the spring would have playing in the, to playing in the fall. Like,
because look what Montana did to Washington.
Yeah. There was a lot of teams, FCS teams across the country that were pushing these
or beating
Power Five teams. Yeah. And I mean, I think the best example of this, Northern Iowa tackled incredibly well, like for a first game. Mm-hmm. I bet you could count the number of missed tackles that Northern Iowa had on Saturday on one hand that I can think of at least. And even then it was situations where it's Breece Hall one-on-one with a defensive back in the out in space. And I mean, not many defensive backs across the country are making that tackle at any level. And so it's one of those things where like, I think you can chalk some of that up to you and I, especially defensively, where it's just like, man, those guys are definitely in rhythm and they look like they have played a football game a lot more recently than Iowa State had.
Yeah. And us idiots thought it would be a disadvantage, but right. I think Matt Campbell said it, God knows how many times, three to five times said like, they have an advantage of playing in the spring. Well, shoot. It turns out he was right.
Well, I think wait until the middle of the year with them. And and we'll try and get a different and see how it is then, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
because that's where I feel like maybe fatigue and, you know, just the physical beating that your body takes from playing that many football games in a calendar year. That's like when that could kind of come back to play, especially at the FCS level where they're not going to have as much depth as the FBS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, but again, like shout out to you and I mean that they played, they did everything the way that you should do it in order to give yourself the chance to win a game against a team like Iowa State, where you gotta, like, schematically, and this will come out, it'll be on the doing a full hour for Channel 5 for the CyHawk game day on Saturday, but also in the column is going to be more in depth. It'll come out on Wednesday, talking about what you and I did, like, schematically, which kind of frustrated Iowa State a little bit, which caused, like, they identified where Iowa State coming into the year could potentially have some little wrinkles and where those wrinkles can be exploited. And so they caused Iowa State to be frustrated and make kind of poor decisions or force them into decisions they wanted to make. And so, like, you and I was really well coached. They put themselves in position to make plays. They actually made the plays. And then all you can ask in a game where you are the underdog is, In the fourth quarter, do you have a shot to make a couple plays to win the game? Yes. Great. Then you did all you need to do. And if you didn't make those plays, like McElvain throws that interception, I don't know where he was throwing it to, but McElvain doesn't throw that interception. They drive down. Who knows what happens, but they were in the game. They had the chance, didn't make a couple plays, ball game over. So I think they did everything they needed to do within themselves to give themselves a chance to win. And we probably, again, we rode the hype train probably a little bit too hard, but that is sort of what should be expected from a you and I game anywhere.
How would you evaluate the play of the offensive line?
Nothing's ever as good as it seems. Nothing's ever as bad as it seems. I don't think it was that bad. I think a lot of it was, okay, so like the two easy examples. Again, that back to that first play. The very first play of the game was a stretch to the side, to the Iowa State sideline from Breece Hall. It was full stretch zone. It was, we're going to get the ball to Breece. He's really good usually at reading this play. He's going to get up, make one cut, get up the field, you know, and if he makes somebody miss, he makes somebody miss and takes it for 80. And what you're looking for lack of a better term, you're looking for two butts to face each other, two of your own team's butts to face each other. So if you have a fullback that's kicking somebody out, and a tight end that has reached somebody, then the tight end's facing in towards the ball and the fullback's facing away. There's your gap that you're running through. So Breece normally is really good at seeing where that is. The offensive line blocked it perfectly. Jared Russ was in perfect position. He had a great kick out and it was a linebacker of safety. And Breece, if Breece puts his foot in the ground right behind Jared or right behind Russ, then he is one-on-one with the safety. And there's another safety that's coming over top for help. So it's probably not going to be a touchdown, but it's going to be 8 or 9 yards right away. First play of the game. He misses where Russ's block, where he misreads it, just flat out misreads it, plays over the top. And the guy that Russ is kicking out then becomes like a box tackle, which means there's one guy in your left shoulder, one guy in your right shoulder. So the safety that would have been unblocked becomes the left shoulder box tackle guy. And the guy that Russ was blocking became the right shoulder box tackle guy. So it looked like, if you don't watch the play itself, it looked like the offensive line or the fullbacks or tight ends didn't block anybody. Well, they did. Breece just went to the wrong spot. Russ was pushing a guy away from where he was supposed to be going. Breece just happened to run into where that guy was happening. So offensive line does it perfect. Breece screws it up on that play. Cause would you want him to be read a perfect? Yeah. But he's playing in front of 68,000 people. He wants to run as fast as he can. Like, stuff happens. It's week one. And then this another play, which I think was, I don't remember first or second drive, but Jairo Box in there. You and I runs a pressure. It's a twist pressure where as the quarterback looks at the defense, the left defensive end, and then there was a blitzer that was outside of him. And so the defensive end is the responsibility of the tackle. The blitzer is the responsibility of Jairo Box. Your job as a running back in pass protection is always inside out. Because if you step up forward into the B gap and the guy ends up in the C gap, well, you can adjust outwards and kind of push him backwards because then the quarterback just steps up all of a sudden, still has a clean pocket. If you start outside and that guy runs underneath you, the best you can try and do is flatten him all the way across the formation. But most likely that guy's going to run directly into where the quarterback is stepping into. So the quarterback can't be on rhythm. Well, what does Jairrel Brock do? Steps outside. What happened is the defensive end ran straight up the field and the linebacker kind of peeled underneath him. So the defensive end ran to the C gap or outside shoulder of the tackle. The blitzer came into the B gap underneath the tackle. So the outside shoulder of the guard, inside shoulder of the tackle. And Jairrel Brock was outside the tackle. So there was no way he could actually get to that blocker. Then he goes, uh-oh, and tries to recover. And in recovering back underneath to go pick that guy up, he runs into Brock Purdy as Brock's trying to move away from the defender that he missed. Offensive line did their job. They called everything. They blocked everything. Jairrel Brock missed where he was supposed to be. Again, it's week one stuff. Like, you don't know where those blitzes are coming from. It's hard to see where everything's going. His technique was kind of shoddy. He was probably excited too. So like, the offensive line had a lot of times where it wasn't necessarily that they blocked poorly. It was that the situation or the back or the tight end or someone doesn't fit necessarily perfectly. And it just doesn't look like there is a good block. So I think they played okay. The game flow and the other things that were going on made it look like they weren't as effective as they were. So nothing's as bad as it seems. So I would give them, I don't know, like a B. I would give them a C or a B. It's definitely not an F game. It's definitely not an A game, but it's also first week. They're going to clean it up and they're going to be okay. So I don't think it's that bad.
How much of this is just needing to have film of when the bullets are flying and being able to, you know, not where it's in practice where you don't necessarily always know what's coming, but you kind of know what's coming a lot of the time. And it's mm-hmm. like you can start to get a little bit lazy with some of those things or something like that. But then you get back into the game and it's like, oh man, okay, this is what it means when you mess up one time, you know?
Yeah. And you can go, well, in practice, and whether or not you do it intentionally or not, you're like, I know for me, like if I'm doing a pass pro and Jeremiah George is going to rush, Jeremiah George is going to bull rush me. I know that for a fact. So I have to come with a lot more pop to try and meet Jeremiah George. If I'm doing that against AJ or Jake, or fill in the blank with most other linebackers, if I'm going to be doing that against another linebacker, like AJ would very rarely like to bull rush. He liked to play with his hands and kind of be like a defensive end. And so if I were to come at AJ with the same speed that I had, because like Jeremiah George is running full speed, no move. He's not trying to move sideways. He's trying to run your ass over right. and get to the quarterback. So I have to meet that same force, which you kind of have to sacrifice a little bit of technique to get some speed. And so if I'm going to do that, I'm going to meet Jeremiah George full speed, boom. And that's going to be a block. But I know that because I've done it a million times. And I mean, most of the time he would get by me because he's really good. AJ on the other hand would not do that. He would come full speed to try and make you think like he's going to do that bull rush. And then he's going to swim or swipe or play underneath you. So if you come full speed, like you're going to block Jeremiah, you would end up getting your face mask would hit the dirt because AJ is going to swim around you. And like you get used to what happens with each single person. So you kind of have like a built-in film reel of what you need to do against your own team. So it was probably a good reminder to say like, look, guys, you don't know what's happening. You don't know what's coming because we've been playing each other for so long that now like, hey, you know, when there's a linebacker coming, it's not always Mike Rose. Mike,
it's not Will McDonald that's coming off on the edge. It's, you know, like it's something someone like else. That.
It's not yeah. Mike likes to have this move or Orion Vance likes to do this thing. Well, the guy might be in the same position. It might be the same front that you saw with Orion Vance, but it's not Orion Vance. You have to approach it differently. The way that guys fit, the way everything feels a little bit different. So you would hope, or you would have hoped that they would have gotten a better idea of that kind of because they're such a mature team to know that it's going to be different when you're actually meeting against someone else. But it probably did or does take that, even for a team that's returning 36 of their two deep, it probably does take that first live reps to go like, oh yeah, this is okay. I need to definitely take a more conservative approach here. I need to be more aggressive here because, you know, it's not Will McDonald. It's not Mike Rose. It's not J.R. Singleton. Like it is a different human being that has different tendencies that I don't know.
So what would you give the running backs for a grade just for the entire day then? If you say you give the offensive line a B or a C, I mean,
I would give the running back slightly worse than that. And I think that's also graded on a curve, like the expectations for the running and my expectations for the running backs are a little bit higher, because they have such defined roles. Like Breece is the do most of the things back. He is run, catch, screens, you know, be a dynamic playmaker and block sometimes. And then Jairel Brock is be a blocker, be physical, and then spell Breece and run the ball a little bit, put your head down, you know, be inside the tackles. Like, they have such clearly defined roles.
He had some good runs when he ran the ball.
He did. Yeah. And so it's just a matter of like, the expectations for them is really high because they've played a lot of ball, and you have a little bit more time as a running back than you do as an offensive lineman. Cause the guy you're trying to hit as an offensive lineman, you could probably smell his breath. Like, where you are lined up, he's literally a foot away from you. Whereas running back, you have 5 yards to kind of react to something. So I tend to think that it comes a little bit quicker for a back or like a running back to just be able to see it because you have a little bit more space. But again, at the same time, you are reacting to what other people do and you are reacting to what your offensive line does. So if they don't have it quite figured out, or you're not 100% sure on the rhythm or where they're going to fit, or, you know, so it's week one stuff. I would say, yeah, lower mid C, I'd give them a C for what the expectations for what that group can and should be doing is probably about a C.
All right. Then real quick, I mean, the last thing we haven't talked about on the offensive side, and then we'll talk about the defense and take a break. I mean, I thought Brock had a solid day.
He was a bright spot.
Yeah.
He was the bright spot on offense.
He didn't do anything like remarkable, but he was just really solid and he was obviously efficient. I mean, he only threw, I think, 5 incompletions. Yeah. It was 21 to 26, 197 yards. Obviously no touchdowns or interceptions, but I mean, I thought that he played about as good of a day as he could on when you're not going to do anything to score, you know?
Yeah. And just back to that golf metaphor, like his missed shots in years past, he's thrown an interception or he's fumbled the ball or made a really bad read or gambled something or whatever. And he'd have a tee shot that goes plunks into the water, you know, like you got it to, it's really bad, hard to recover from. This one, if he did have a bad play, it was like in the first cut of the rough where like, it's not perfect, but it's very far from dangerous. And so I think that's the thing. And obviously, I mean, it was the story about Brock coming into this year was, bro, you don't have to do everything. Like, we got playmakers around you. You don't have to make every single play. You have a great defense. You've got a great running game. You've got great receivers. You're fine. And so that lesson was definitely applied. Like, he played within the system, was hitting people where they needed to get hit. Again, the Charlie factor is imagining on a few situations whether it was scrambling, like the one he missed to Chase. Chase just doesn't have the same feel for space as Charlie does. So like, I would imagine, Charlie is going to come and maybe I didn't watch that one. It's hard to see from the exact angle, but I would imagine Chase didn't come back to the sideline as much as Brock was expecting him to come back to the sideline, which is why it looked like it was super errant. Like, it might've been a little bit of an errant pass, but with Charlie understanding space and motion really well with a quarterback, he's going to adjust to where Brock is going. So that play that looked like a bad pass was probably something that like Charlie at least gets his hands on because he's adjusting back with it. And that's where Brock's expecting it to be. So, but like all of his mistakes, like the mistakes that he was making were throw it high and out of bounds. Like if it's Xavier Hutchinson going to catch the ball or no one's going to catch the ball and we punt. All right, big deal. We got the best defense in the conference. Run them out there. So, I thought Brock was definitely a bright spot. There were some more things. I'm sure there were things that he could have done, could have checked plays, could have gotten people in the right spot. So I don't want to give him like an A+, but I would say like an B+, A- at least for Brock. I think he was the best
first
player
game,
on offense. Yeah. I think he was
game,
the best player on
complain.
Offense.
Yeah. And I think that that throw that he made to Jost Gates in the corner of the end zone was a beautiful ball.
Especially with what Gates left him. So yeah. Like, they always, Herman always called it the 4-yard highway, which is you want to be 4 yards off the sideline and you have to battle the defensive back to stay 4 yards off the sideline because the quarterback needs that 4 yards to throw you away from the defender. Well, Skates gave him about a 1/2-yard highway. And so he was, I mean, he put it exactly the only place that it could have gone with right. How Skates was kind of pushed to the sideline. So he's got to battle, Skates has to battle that defensive back more towards the field to give Brock room. But even with that, he almost made the play. Like if Skates is Hakeem Butler length, that's a touchdown because he can just go reach for it and keep his foot on the ground. But you know, no one is Hakeem Butler length. So it's
still damn near got it.
Yeah. I mean, it was 10 inches out of bounds. So it was, yeah, I think Brock was B plus, A minus. I thought very solid, especially for week one.
All right. It would be hard to give the defense anything but an A, I think. Or you probably give them a B because of the fact that they did allow the two big plays that turned into a touchdown. But other than that, man, I mean, that I charted it out. Or I didn't chart it out, but I just did the math. You take out the two plays, the 37-yard pass where Will McElvain's falling down
and it goes through Orion Vance's
hands and is caught by a guy that takes it 37 yards. And then the 52-yard touchdown, like two plays later, they had 58 plays for 186 yards, which is about 3.2 yards per play.
Which is very bad.
Yeah. I mean,
or very good for a defense.
Yeah. Is elite for a defense. And yeah. I think Northern Iowa crossed into Iowa State Field two other times.
It was the field goal and the last play of the game.
Yeah. Or they might've gotten there one more time, but it was like when they threw the interception and they had like just crossed the 50 yard line.
Yeah. So it was the defense played awesome. They missed more tackles than they should, but again, it's week one, like you're not going to be perfect. They also played, and it's what I think this is similar, like, and this is going to kind of preview the second half of the show is going to be talking about Iowa. Iowa and Iowa State's defenses played actually really, really similar. The mistakes that were presented to them, they took advantage of. They just were much smaller mistakes for Northern Iowa than they were for Indiana that Iowa took advantage of. So like the mistakes that Northern Iowa made, like that, it's really funny. If you have the chance, go back and watch Will McDonald's first sack, because the tackle thought it was on two. The rest of the field, all 21 other guys knew that it was on one. And so he doesn't move. The right tackle doesn't move a muscle. The guard goes to take a pass set and pass sets into the tackle, who's still in his stance. The tackle falls on his ass and Will McDonald is unblocked to go get McElvain. Like, that's a mistake that you take advantage of. You get a sack, boom, drive over. Like, that's a mistake that happens. Indiana, the mistakes that they made were receiver trips on an out route. The quarterback puts too much, you know, a million mile, like a fastball right to his numbers. It bounces straight up in the air. Riley Moss catches it, scores a touchdown. Like, both of those things are capitalizing on a mistake. It's just a smaller mistake to have happen. So I think the defense, other than like, honestly, the one that goes through Orion Vance's hands where Will McElvain freaking submarine pitches that one to through, that is schoolyard. There is nothing you can do about that.
That's Pat Mahomes type stuff.
There is, yeah, it's, you know, this is a earmuff. This is a shit happens moment. Yeah. Like there is nothing you can do about that. That's just bad luck or good luck for you and I.
Shout out to Will McElvain though, man. That guy he's something else, dude. He plays, I don't know what it is, but for some reason he plays the best games of his career against Iowa State. He didn't play that well in this game, but he's still like you sit there and you're like, man, this guy drives me crazy. I'm glad they don't have to play him again.
He got some confidence. He's got some swagger. I like it.
Did you see his 515 chain?
Hey, he's from Lincoln, dude. Southside Pride. Southside Pride.
Yes, sir.
But the one play that I would have a little bit of hesitation against or like irritation with is the touchdown. Like that was the mistake that actually is a preventable mistake. Wasn't it a linebacker that was in man-to-man coverage of the wide receiver or a running back? Like it was, and he tried to jump underneath it and the two safeties were kind of out of position to make that tackle, understanding where it was. So you probably shouldn't have dove for that ball, like make it a catch tackle, make them earn their way down the field. But if you do, you should have safeties behind you that are going to make that tackle, so he doesn't scamper for 52. Like that's a thing that Haycock is probably going to lay into him about, because that's a mistake that this defense is meant to prevent against. Like you have guys behind you who should be able to do that. And you shouldn't gamble that much to make that place. Like I don't know the intricacies, what the play call was, and maybe he's supposed to try and play aggressive, but that is a play that shouldn't happen. Whereas the one where McElvain's again, falling down upside down and underhand tosses one sideways, like, all right, buddy, you win that one. Good job. Like that's a Steph Curry falling backwards from 47 feet out and he makes a three. You're like, all right, I couldn't have played any better defense. Hats off. Let's get the next one.
Yeah. And you have not seen that very often from Iowa State or any team playing against Iowa State where they're able to catch a short pass. I mean, or, you know, intermediate pass, I guess, and then take it for catch and run for 52 yards. Like the number of times that's happened in the last 5 years is very, very small. That's why it was surprising to me. I was like, damn, it's not very often that they allow anything like that.
Well, and I think that's the Lawrence White factor, is that Lawrence White would be there because he's always in the right spot. Lawrence White, Greg Eisworth, and Isham Young. Those three back there with as much experience or talent as Isham Young in that case, as much experience and talent as those guys have, and having seen a lot of football, they are going to be in the right spot to put it on the ground. Like, get the ball on the ground. Okay, you caught the ball at 11 yards. You ran for five more. It's a 16-yard gain. Big deal. Do it again. Let's see if you can do it again. Like that, just or make them earn it. And I think I would guess that there is either a linebacker or a safety or multiple people that should have been, based on the front and the protection, or not the front, based on the formation and the motion and whatever, and the splits, should have probably seen that that was a thing coming. They just hadn't had enough reps against other people to know that that was the case. So again, not perfect. I can't say the defense, because of that, I can't say like it's an A+ game, but it's damn near close. I mean, two interceptions, one of which probably should have been batted down, but hey, get the pick, man, get the pick. So it's two interceptions, 3 yards of play, including that includes the 30 yards or 40 yards in the very last play of the game where they're just, the safeties are playing 57 yards off the ball. Like that includes that play too. So like probably 120 of their yards came on three plays. So that's probably half of their offensive output. So other than those three plays, which one of them, you're just spotting them yards because you just need to get it on the ground with 6 seconds to play. Pretty darn good. Like, that is about as good as a defense can play in week one, because again, there's stuff that's going to happen. Tackles aren't going to get off the ball. Just take advantage of those mistakes when they're made.
Yeah. They had, you and I had only two other plays that went for, they had one other pass that went for 15 plus and one run in the entire game that went for 10 or more yards.
And that's it. And wasn't that McElvain, a scramble?
No, it was Dom Williams up the middle for an 11 yard gain.
Okay.
In the second quarter. So the only play that they had in the second half that went for 15 plus through the air was that very last one, the last play of the game,
which is pretty darn good.
Yeah. Which is pretty
darn good.
And it, I mean, at the end of the day, that defense, no matter what with the offense, the defense is good enough that they are going to keep people in. They're going to keep Iowa State in every game, in my mind, unless something like unbelievable happens where they're turning the ball over and having to defend like 20 yard fields.
Well, that and I think that tackling is going to continue to get better. Like, it's the first time they were probably tackling, maybe it might have been like the third or fourth time they're tackling any human being since last year. Like, they stayed off of contact for a long time to try and keep people healthy, and just working on, you know, weight and whatever, all that kind of stuff. So, like, their tackling wasn't ideal. And that's not it's not super surprising in week number one. But if you're nitpicking on allowing 150 yards of offense outside of three plays, all right, let's nitpick. But overall, they're going to tackle better as the season goes along. They're going to be in better position on those intermediate passing games. I thought 19, what's his name?
Kimani King.
Kimani King played pretty well. Like, by the time the second half rolled around and he'd seen some snaps, I think Kimani King kind of showed that he is the other guy. Like, he is the Lawrence White replacement. So yeah, Kimani King, Isham Young, Greg Eisworth back there. You got Datron Young, who, dude, solid. Like, to this point, he is the most improved player since Jaquan Bailey.
He's earned his name again.
He's earned his name. His number two is now Datron Young. And then Anthony Johnson. I mean, he had an absolute hell of a game too. Like, yeah. They didn't even try throwing at 26. The one time they did, he batted it down. Like, just, they're not throwing at 26. And then the front, I think, played pretty well. And also, while we're talking about that side of the ball, one of the things that really stuck out is the Trevor Penning kid, the left tackle, number 70, he can ball. He is really good. So, and him and Will McDonald, I mean, that was tough. Him and Penning and Enny were going back and forth with each other too. Like, he is a solid player. I would imagine that he is every bit the first or second round draft pick that people are kind of projecting him to be, because dude is real.
Dude, imagine if they'd had that offensive line with him and Spencer Brown.
Oh yeah, on either side.
The Bills now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, those are some dogs, man.
That was a good offensive line. For the most part, didn't make a lot of mistakes, but when they did, Iowa State capitalized. Like,
I do think you got to say though, like, even still, Iowa State's defensive line was disruptive. I mean, all of them were. Like, Enny did a really nice job of. There were some times where Enny was just physically dominating people, pushing them backwards. You know, yeah, and Zach Peterson had one play where he pushed somebody backwards, and then I can't remember who it was that ran up in the hole and made the tackle, but it had to have been Isham, I'm sure.
Zach Peterson, I remember listening to you and Jay on the Thursday show was talking about how, like, he needed to improve his first step or something like that. Talk about him. That dude is explosive.
Yeah.
55. He's like, he looks like he's, I mean, tied to a cannonball and shot out of a cannon, like fast off the ball. And he was underneath the shoulder pit, like underneath the chest plate of every guy that he was into. Was he in the right spot 100% of the time? No, but his effort was incredible. And his explosiveness was absolutely bananas.
But that's what I'm saying. On this play that I remember, he was, I remember it being towards the press box. So he was on like on that side of the field, and he pushed the right tackle 3 yards into the backfield on a run play, and then made the running back avoid him. And then whoever came in and tackled the running back just blew him up. I had to have been Isham. Like, it was just one of those hits that, you know, is Isham Young. Isham Young was in there popping people, man. Oh boy. You could tell that guy was ready to hit somebody, but
Isham Young, boy, you know, I was up in the one time where he had a run fill that just went boom. When you can make a group of, I don't know, how many people you think were in the press box? 100-ish? 850, yeah, yeah. 50, 75, let's call it 75 people. When you can make 75 people in unison go, ooh, who are professionals at watching this and are told not to react to the game, when you can make all of them simultaneously make that noise, you know it's a good hit.
Yeah. Yeah, that was big time, man. Isham's a heck of a player. But yeah, I'm glad that you shouted out Datron. Got his first career interception on Saturday. I don't know what career start that was, but got his first career interception and was really solid for the most part. I mean, I think that they're going to be perfectly fine at that position.
Yeah, both corners, and I think Tavon Kyle even was playing nickel. I think like Kamani King and Tavon, it was 18 and 19 were kind of hard to just like differentiate on the field with other pads. But I think Tavon Kyle was playing when they would run multiple wide receiver sets. They could put him in as a nickel and let him be the third safety. And then he would kind of follow, be more of a coverage guy if they needed him to. So like they were still playing a bunch of guys on defense.
DJ Tampa played a lot. Mm-hmm.
TJ Tampa played a lot. Tavon Kyle, Datron Young, Anthony Johnson, Amos, the safety, Eisworth, Isham, Gary Vaughn is going to, whether Orion Vance is healthy or not, I don't know. But if Gary Vaughn plays like he did again, in as filling in for it, Iowa State's going to be fine.
Yeah. It was perfect that Rory Walling got the first tackle of the season too.
Oh, and just stuck him.
Yeah.
Just stuck him.
That was about exactly what you ever could have expected. That went perfectly, except for the fact that Andrew Meavis kicked the ball like he was like he bladed a 5-iron or something.
I think that one's that shot was for those that golf, again, two golf metaphors in the same fart. Sorry. But if you've ever playing by yourself and you're like, ask the group in front of you, like, hey, can I play through? And it's a par 5 and you have to play driver and you like, shit. Okay. Well, these guys think that I'm really good if I'm playing through. So I have to hit this drive perfect. And you try and swing as hard as you possibly can, hit one off the heel. And it's like bounces off a pine tree about 30 yards in front of you. Cause you swung so hard that you couldn't even see where you were going. Yeah. That was Andrew Meavis on the first kick. Like 99% of his blood flow was flowing on pure adrenaline and completely forgot the technique to actually kick a football.
He knew that not only was this going to be his first ever kick in a Power 5 game, but he was also had the weight of knowing how kickoffs had been for Iowa State for the last year and the way that the fans were going to react the second that he kicked one out of the end zone.
Oh man. Yeah. But he got it back. It was congrats to Cyclone Nation for the loudest sarcastic applause known to man.
Yeah, he died 4 or 5 touchbacks, I think.
Except the first one.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was good to see. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about this game on Saturday against the Iowa Hawkeyes when we on Football and Random Things. Welcome back into Football and Random Things on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network. All right, Jeff. Saturday afternoon in Ames, Iowa, the showdown, the highly anticipated, some say most anticipated, Cy-Hawk game of all time. College game day will be back in town. Reese Davis will be walking into a hornet's nest. What sign will you be out there with to troll ESPN on their flagship college football show?
something with like, I apologize for no SEC being present at this moment. There's something to the fact that even on, like, when I was watching, I watched Notre Dame, Florida State, at least a little bit of Notre Dame, Florida State on Sunday night. And at halftime, they were previewing the two big games this weekend. I don't remember one of the, I don't remember the first one, but the second one was Iowa State, Iowa.
It was probably Ohio State and Oregon was probably the other one.
Ohio State and Oregon. Yeah, that was the first one. And they're super comfortable talking about Ohio State and Oregon. And then in the second one, it almost felt like you were at the dentist's office and they're asking you how your weekend was. Like, you don't really want to talk about it, but you know you have to talk about it. So you just kind of do. And you give just enough detail that they don't ask any more questions, but not so much detail that they really care or get a good picture of it. Like, you just want the conversation to be over. That's about the enthusiasm that they talked about Iowa State, because there are no SEC teams present at game day. And you know what? I'm sorry, ESPN. There is not, nor will there be. Sorry.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. You and I kind of talked about it before we started recording. I think people are excited, obviously, but the excitement level is considerably lower than it was the last time they came, mm-hmm. which I'm sure just comes with the fact that they've done it before. You know, it's not something new. So it's just not as exciting when it's not something new, but I'm interested to see what it will be like in comparison to the first time.
I think that still, like, right now we're recording this on Labor Day. So, like, it's a holiday. We've not had enough time to, you know, really like interact with other people a ton. So I'm sure there is going to be, once you get kind of back to work and back to the gym and back to hanging out with your friends, the restaurants or whatever, there's going to be some like more built up excitement for it. So I think by like Thursday, Friday, it's going to get not necessarily to a true like fever pitch, but it's going to be pretty hopped up by the time Thursday, Friday rolls around. But yeah, it's not quite the same. Like when they announced that College Game Day was coming last time, people were like bouncing off the walls excited.
Right.
But this time it's like, cool, we deserve it this time. Thank you. You are actually doing what we expect you to do. Coming to Ames for this important, really, really important game. So I think it's going to be kind of fun. You don't know when it's going to come back. So I'm going to be there at butt crack of dawn just to make sure you kind of soak in all the experience of what's going on and get to the tailgate lots as early as you can and make sure you stay lucid enough to do TV at 10. And after that, enjoy the game.
I envision Saturdays, the environment around the stadium, the environment inside the stadium at the, you know, before the game starts being tense. I think it'll be an intense environment with the way that, I mean, obviously this is a huge game for both teams, but when you factor in it being in Ames, a pro Iowa State crowd, haven't beat them in 5 years. Like, I think that this is going to be just a powder keg of, you'll be able to cut the tension with a knife.
I bet not until about 1 o'clock. I think before then, it's just going to be like a party atmosphere of like, hey, you know, cause like I have cousins that went to Iowa. I have, you know, uncles that went to Iowa. Like my,
sorry,
it's okay. We all have black sheep in the family, but like, you know, you have friends, whatever, like there's just a natural in-state rivalry and they're your friends and whatever, your tailgating. But then like 1:30 rolls around and like, you can actually hear that like the players are kind of coming onto the field, like the kickers or whatever, doing kind of their pregame stuff. And you're like, oh, the game is coming now. It's not like we're not having the state fair anymore. Like, this is a game and this game matters. And so I think it's going to start to get tense the closer and closer it gets to kickoff. And I think for good reason, like this is going to be, I don't know, Iowa looked really good on Saturday. Again, it's never as good as it looks and never as bad as it looks. But I think the line, I text you like on Saturday, late night when we got back, I think the initial line was like Iowa State minus four.
It was four and it's actually moved towards Iowa State now.
Oh really? Okay. Yeah. So Jack Trice has got to be worth what, 3.5?
Last time I looked ahead, I don't expect that to happen throughout the week though. I would be surprised if the line does not swing towards Iowa. Iowa State will close as like a 2.5 point favorite.
Yeah. That's my thought. Like 2.5, 3.5, somewhere in there. Like it's going to be more or less, if this was a neutral field, it'd be a pick'em game. Like Jack Trice is the advantage, which is the reason why Iowa State would be favored. But it's both these teams are very, very similar to each other. Like they have really good offensive line. Like Linderbaum is probably the best center in the country. You have good secondary players that are always in the right spot. You have a running back that is dynamic, explosive. You have a tight end. I forget, LaRosa, 84.
Sam LaPorta.
He's good. Like, you have a good tight end on both sides. You have offenses that are not predicated around huge, giant chunk plays. It's around, we are going to out-execute you all the way down the field. And then you have just physicality everywhere. So, like, these teams are really mirror images of each other, and they go about it in different ways, where, like, Iowa runs a true hard four down front that they try and two gap everything. And we've talked about two gapping on here. If you're not sure, go back and listen to any one of the previous episodes about Iowa. They play a pretty conservative. They tend not to bring a ton of pressure, where Iowa State will mix in pressures, especially this year. That's one thing I noticed on Saturday, is they brought a lot more blitzes, which is neat to see. But Iowa State's more multiple and more kind of dynamic in what they call on defense, where Iowa State is a lot more vanilla, and they're just, we're going to be really good at what we do. So defensively, they do the same things, just in different ways. Offensively, they do the same things in different ways. So it's going to be who out executes the other one, like who makes bigger mistakes and who just does the stuff better, because one team is not ultimately better than the other one from a talent perspective. It's just, all right, let's see your guts. Like, how are you going to do when you have to move that defensive end out of the way? Are you going to move him, or is he going to get it? Is he going to stuff the gap and cause a play to get blown up? Like, that's how this is going to come down to, is just execution.
This is like Ollie Frazier. This is like a heavyweight. This game is going to be like a heavyweight fight, I think. And it's going to be one that's going to go 10 rounds. Like Bloom tweeted out that there was only 20 possessions in that game on Saturday between the two teams. I mean, this is going to be the same type of game, yeah, in my mind, where it will be very low possession, low play number, and it will just be, you better have brought your machete to the knife fight, because we're going to be going all night long here.
And it's going to be, I mean, you talk about physical, like, as much fun as it was, like, I got goosebumps every time, like, even a position group would come onto the field, because I was down kind of wandering the sidelines, and you're like, the running backs come out, or the wide receivers come out of the tunnel, the crowd goes nuts. And then, you know, Kanye West starts playing, they do the weather report type thing. Uh-huh. That energy in the stadium. Now take that and crank it up another two notches. And that's what's going to be on Saturday. Like, the pure energy and like the adrenaline of it. And like, I would imagine being at Kinnick was similar to at being at Jack Trice against UNI. But Iowa State is another level of energy. And so like, all that juice that's flowing through your, like, every part of your body, you're going to have to put that into a dude that is feeling the exact same thing and is really good at what they do. So like, yeah, who's going to execute better? And there's going to be so much guts that like, you're going to be exhausted on Sunday, not just because like physically exhausted, like emotionally exhausted, just from having exerted so much energy and like emotional energy into that game.
It'll be good to be able to go to Vegas and play a team that also lost to an FCS team last weekend.
Yeah, substantially
next
worse.
Next week. All right. So what are the things you think Iowa State's going to need to be focusing on? What are the things that you want to see early in the game on Saturday to feel good about it? Is it getting closer, or it's going?
So one thing I noticed against Indiana is that Iowa trusts their secondary a lot, not implicitly in play calling, but in just the way that their linebackers are going to play. Like, their linebackers play downhill hard. And like, number 44, I don't know his name, the middle linebacker.
Is it Jack Campbell?
I have no idea. But like, 44 is the most Iowa middle linebacker of all time. Like, he's got the neck roll.
Seth Benson.
Dude plays straight downhill. Like, he is straight line kind of fast, but like, he is a middle linebacker, and he is going to come and thump. Well, and they allow him to do that because that's where he's comfortable. To bring Jeremiah George up again, that's the way Jeremiah liked to play, is play in the box. I'm going to punch you in the sternum because you can't handle this level of physicality. That's the way he plays, but he's able to play downhill so fast because of how much confidence they have in the secondary. And so there's two things that you can address because they play so downhill. Is establish a running game that makes it so, whether it's moving offensive linemen, bringing tight ends back, bringing fullbacks out in front, leading, because that type of downhill stuff is really good for stuffing plays for 0 or 1 yards, but it's also going to open you up to 9, 10, 12 yard plays. So if you can crease that because they play downhill so hard, that's going to be a big way to do it. And also play action. Like, if Charlie's able to go, or if he's not, then your intermediate, like the passing game right behind where the linebackers are, if you can do intermediate passing or play action stuff to keep the linebackers back, that's a thing that I think Iowa State, outside of just generally executing better, specific to Iowa, is if they can do that, then that's going to make it so Iowa has to do something a little bit different, because they want to play downhill, leave most of the coverage to their safeties, their corners, and let the linebackers play in the run game for the most part. So that's what I would say, is establish the running game to the point where you're hitting, not maybe, you know, you'd love 60, 70 yard plays, but where it's 8, 12, 15, 13 yards, 7 yards on a first down. Like if you're doing that type of running game, then that forces linebackers to think a little bit more before inserting right away. And then, yeah, being able to run right behind or complete passes right behind where they are, it slows them down, which makes things, again, a little bit easier to move around. And so I think offensively, it's still make good decisions like they had been, but clean up the stupid mistakes. And then if you can, again, I would love to have Charlie back for this game. Again, I don't know, neither one of us are going to know, but I would love to be able to get him to be able to play. And again, if not, then be able to complete the passes where he normally would be catching them.
I would be very surprised if he didn't play.
If he did not play?
Yeah.
Honestly. He suited up.
I think he was very close to being able to play on Saturday, but if they'd been playing Iowa last week, he probably would have played.
And he was suited up. He went through warmups, and I'm guessing what they said was, we're going to dress you. And if it gets to the point where we feel like it's necessary, we can put you in there, but we're going to plan on you not playing, but dress and go through the warmup, go through the routine, see how it feels, get back, get those jitters out, that kind of thing. And we'll have you for next week. That's kind of what it looked like. But again, we don't know any information. We are just speculating.
Mm-hmm. All right. Then defensively, what's the biggest thing to focus on ahead of this game? I mean, I think that unit played so well. It's just normal preparation, but
yeah, I mean that and just buckle your chin straps. Like, yeah. It's going to feel a lot like you and I with a more accurate passer, like a less mobile, but more accurate passer. So Spencer Petras, again, he played pretty well. I think all things held equal, he was pretty accurate. He was pretty on rhythm. Not everything was pretty, and he threw a lot of balls away, and it's not ideal. It's week one. Hand wave a little bit on week one to them. But it's going to be like playing this game again, where really good physical offensive line. You and I has a first or second round draft pick. He's playing tackle. Iowa has a first or second round draft pick. He's just playing center. You got one stud. You got a couple other guys that are really good. This is different in that their running back is probably one of the top three, four most talented running backs in the country. So you have to just buckle the chin straps up a little bit tighter, bite down that mouth guard a little bit tighter, because you're going to have to deal with a lot of physicality. But it's just execute. I could call Iowa's offense as little as they've changed over the years, it's not exceptionally difficult to predict what they're going to do. You just have to be able to stop it. They want to throw to the tight ends. They want to run play action. They want to run stretch zone. They like to run power. They're going to try and get pro formation. Even if it's out of a shotgun, it's just an attached fullback tight end and then a running back. They're going to be running the same stuff. You know what they're going to do. It's not a surprise. It's just, can you execute against them? Because they're always really good up front, always really good at running back. Just bring your chin strap. Buckle it up and bite down that mouth guard.
Do you have any other general college football thoughts after week one?
I feel like props to most national media. I don't check into Twitter very much. It's hard to get like a true pulse on it. So you might have a better idea on it, but I think props to most fans and media outlets across the country for kind of taking week one as like, well, this was weird. Week one, on to the next, rather than being like, Oklahoma's they're not even a top 25 team, you know, Clemson, drop them out of the, you know, like, it's some dumb stuff happens. And last year was weird. Like, this is a weird week one. Let's see what happens this week. Let's hold off judgment until we see how they improve. So I think there was a lot of weird stuff. Alabama looks like they're right now head and shoulders above everybody. They might be, they might not be. Minnesota might be really good. Iowa State might be really good. Who knows? Like, Alabama looks
Northern
like
Iowa could be the number one FCS team in the country. And they're going to average 12 points a game on offense.
Yeah. Who knows? Like, so it's, week one was just weird. So like across the country, if you have a rooting interest or a vested interest of any other teams, and they might not have performed as well as you thought, or conversely, again, like our friends or air quotes friends across the state, 34-10 or whatever it was, 34-6. Like, that's probably not a realistic score if you play Indiana in week 10. Like, there, it's not going to be the same week, because week one weird stuff happened. So weird stuff happened. Let's see what happens from big improvement time from week one to week two.
For sure. Shout out to Mackenzie Milton, what he did last night, man. That was really cool for to see him lead the Florida State down the field, force that game into overtime. I just wanted to say that because that was a pretty cool story. All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you on Friday. Well, I'll talk to you on Friday. Everybody will hear us on Saturday on the tailgate show. And you said you're going to have your column on Wednesday?
Yep, column be to you on Wednesday, or by Wednesday, and should be able to read that time.
Cool. Everybody can look forward to that. We'll talk to you guys again here later on in the week. Have a happy rest of your Labor Day weekend. Peace.